Shalom, everyone. Netanyahu came to the White House again, surprisingly, this week, met with Trump extensively. The U.S. and Iran are planning on meeting this Saturday, this weekend, for direct talks about shutting down the Iranian nuclear program. Israel is going to be leading the attack along with U.S. support if those talks do not work out. And Iran has decided to prepare for that attack by moving their mobile missiles to new positions in and around the Middle East. Messianic World Update begins now. Shalom, everyone. I'm Monty Judah with Lion of Lamb Ministries. Welcome to another edition of Messianic World Update. Today's date is April 11th of the year 2025. And here's the news for the week. All this week, we've been hearing in the Western media all about tariffs. Tariffs are on, tariffs are off. Everybody's worried about the future economy, future market trends, the Wall Street, and so forth. Well, ladies and gentlemen, it's been perfect cover for what is really going on in the world, which is very serious. And it came as a part of the discussions about tariffs this week. Benjamin Netanyahu made a surprise visit to the White House. He was actually in travel status when the president said, "I need you to come to the White House," and he came. When they got there, of course, they, in front of the press, they did talk about tariffs. They mentioned about Gaza and talked about Hezbollah, but the real subject was about Iran. So here is the Prime Minister Netanyahu at the White House and some of his comments there in the Oval Office.
We just saw your representative in the Department of Justice fighting anti-Semitism, standing up for Israel in international forums. I just want you to know from the heart, it's deeply, deeply appreciated. As you said, we had the opportunity to talk today about many subjects. First, if I can mention tariffs, it's a subject of some interest today. I can tell you that I said to the president a very simple thing. We will eliminate the trade deficit with the United States. We intend to do it very quickly. We think it's the right thing to do. And we're going to also eliminate trade barriers, a variety of trade barriers that have been put up unnecessarily. And I think Israel can serve as a model for many countries who ought to do the same. I recognize the position of the United States. It says, you know, we are allowing other countries to put tariffs on us, but we don't put tariffs on them. And, you know, I'm a free trade champion, and free trade has to be fair trade. And I think that's basically the position that you have put forward, Mr. President. We are going to eliminate the tariffs, and rapidly. I had the opportunity to speak to Secretary Lutnick yesterday. We talked about how we could affect this quickly, and I hope to bring a solution very quickly. We're not talking about intentions. We're not talking about, you know, just words. We're talking about results.
That's great.
And those results are going to come in. That's the first.
Thank you very much. That's very nice.
Thank you.
Mr. President, what about the hostage for you?
Well,
let him finish.
Let him finish.
Okay.
Begin. We spoke about not only the hostages, but about Gaza. The hostages obviously is a human story of just unbearable agony. I speak to the families. I spoke to them yesterday. Spoke to another one when I was in Hungary before I came here. I speak to them every day. They're in agony. The hostages are in agony. And we want to get them all out.
So let's talk about what else was discussed there in that interview. It's very clear that the president has stated, obviously Israel is in complete agreement, that the Iranian nuclear program must come to an end. It must be destroyed. It must be eliminated. All of the sites that are part of it need to be taken out. There is an example that was done historically in which Libya at one time was trying to build a nuclear program, but when they shut it down, Americans actually went in and destroyed their nuclear sites and their facilities. And the mention was made by Benjamin Netanyahu that that's exactly what needs to be done with Iran. We need to have real people like Americans go into Iran and destroy those sites and make sure they are eliminated and there's no more clandestine effort on the part of Iran trying to build a nuclear weapon. Now, obviously, Iran is saying, no, that's not what they're about, but we all know differently in the world, and we've been tracking it for many years. And Israel has proved it to the world time and time again that that's what's going on. Iran is going to have to agree to do this, and the reason is because we have a real military option on the table for the very first time. We have President Trump saying in this letter that he sent back some time ago in early March, you must agree to these negotiations to shut those programs down, or there will be a military response to Iran. Now, we've been tracking that since that letter went out. We think the time frame of that letter is by the end of April. And by the way, as you know, we're 11 days into April already, so we're only talking about 3 more weeks at the most for it. So these talks that are taking place this Saturday are profound in terms of trying to get it within that time frame. He also made the statement that if there is a military operation, that Israel will be in the lead of that operation, obviously with U.S. support. We'll talk about that a little bit more. But let's talk about these talks happening this Saturday. They're going to meet in Oman, which is just outside of the Persian Gulf. And Steve Witkoff of the United States apparently is going to represent the United States. The president has said these are going to be direct talks with high Iranian officials, officials who can commit Iran to some decisions. Of course, Iran is playing all kinds of games with this, claiming that they want indirect talks, meaning you can be in one room and I'll be in another room and we'll have somebody going back and forth between the two of us, so they don't give the status to the U.S. that they're meeting with them in a humble way. Iran wants to have, shall we say, equal status in the negotiations. They're trying to leverage every position they can to support them in the negotiations. However, Iran has run out of cards to play, as Trump would say. They've also cited, now we'll discuss this with you, if, Mr. Trump, you freeze the sanctions you put on us, Trump's not going to do that at all. So let's see how the negotiations continue on from there, because all of this preamble stuff that's going into the negotiation is not going to work. How in the world do we know that Khamenei has agreed to come to these talks? Well, it has turned out that it's been learned that the political leaders in Iran have told Khamenei he's got to do this. He's got to talk to U.S. or else they could easily lose the entire Iranian regime politically. So Khamenei is doing this out of desperation. That's not a power position for negotiations. But we know the Iranians, and we know that they're going to use every negotiating tactic they can to delay. The Iranians are famous for using delay tactics in all negotiations. Trump was questioned about this and said, now, if you go into these talks, I mean, what's to say that they're going to cooperate? They'll sound like they're cooperating, but they won't. And in fact, Iran will probably propose what we call an interim agreement, not a real agreement. So Trump was told about that. He said, what are you going to do? And, well, he gave a rather interesting short answer. He said, look, when we get in there, those talks are either going to move forward or else. In other words, we're going to be start off moving forward. We're not going to have a delay. If we have a delay, if they're not going to move forward with it, that's it. They've made their decision. And he basically told them that Iran is facing great danger if they do not get into this negotiation and come to terms with it. We already know that time is running out on the letter, so we're talking about a very short time frame of a few weeks should the talks not go forward. Israel is obviously very concerned about the definition of the success in these talks. Israel needs the Iranian threat to be completely shut down. And they also know that Trump is looking for, shall we say, a quick win. You know, President Trump likes to get in, make decisions quickly, get a deal, step out, you know, hear the cheers for success and so forth. And Israel is concerned that Trump might get in there, figure something out that kind of looks good for him, but not necessarily good for Israel. So I'm sure they've offered their caution to President Trump in these negotiations. I know they've spoken closely with Steve Witkoff on whatever deal is put together. And we know that Iran is going to try to propose interim deals that will stretch the timeline out to give Iran more time to delay the inevitable of a military option. At the same time this is all going on, the U.S. is also trying to negotiate quick hostage release deals, speaking directly with Hamas officials. Egypt has put together a hostage negotiation proposal. U.S. and Israel has put together. The president has said we're very close to putting together deals. Again, the president likes to have quick deals, get things done quickly, and so forth. But again, I want to reiterate, when the questions were asked, now if the deal doesn't go through, what's going to happen? He was very quick to say Israel will lead the attack. Now, let's talk about that, because I don't think any serious person who's looking at this thinks that Iran is going to agree. It's impossible for them to give up their nuclear program. Their ego can't allow them to do it. We know the nature of the Persian people, the history of them throughout the world, and they're going to stick to their guns and their missiles as much as they can. Israel is probably going to lead the attack with attack aircraft, and we've already seen them in demonstration attack Iran previously, and we saw the success of their first strike that they did with that. We also know Israel has a series of special weapons that those aircraft can carry that we haven't seen before, including airborne launched ballistic missiles. And so the attack is going to be very devastating that's coming from Israel. That's the first part. The decisive part will probably be the U.S. support in the form of the B-2s flying out of Diego Garcia with the bunker busters. And they will go after the nuclear sites. And there's a number of nuclear sites for them to go after. Last week, I reported to you that according to the photo that we got from the commercial sources showed that there were five B-2s in Diego Garcia. It turns out there's six of them there. There's only 19 B-2s in the U.S. arsenal, so a third of the U.S. strategic bombing assets are sitting at Diego Garcia ready for Iran. And they have a tremendous capability of altering the state of Iran should they launch several strikes. We also have two aircraft carrier battle groups in the area that have been dealing with the Houthi rebels, and the Houthi rebels are literally being pounded into the ground. The leadership has been destroyed, their sites have been destroyed, their missile supplies have been destroyed, and these carrier battle groups have really put it to the Houthis and any Houthi leaders. They're basically dead, and so it's just a matter of time before that calms down. That action certainly does not require both battle groups, and those battle groups are now available to support operations that go against Iran. Besides that, the U.S. has announced that they've moved Patriot missile batteries previously located in Korea, and they've moved them to the Middle East to protect U.S. bases and U.S. allies in the Persian Gulf region, such as the UAE and Bahrain and others. They've also moved the second THAAD unit. This is a big-time air defense unit. It's called a Theater Area Air Defense Unit. This one system handles the battle management problem of tracking all kinds of airborne targets coming in, including missiles, and then directing defense forces, air defense forces, appropriately to take the targets out. There's a second THAAD unit now in Israel supporting what is going on in anticipation. Iran will launch a counterstrike once they're hit and try to strike other targets in the Middle East, U.S. bases, U.S. allies, and that they'll try to light up the entire Middle East. They really don't have a lot of choice other than just get you know, blown to smithereens. At this point, it appears that the attack would not be a single attack on the part of Israel and the United States. It would be opening up a campaign of a bombing campaign for many days, just like they did with the Houthi rebels. It will be a massive bombing campaign on Iran. Iran will not survive it. Iran's response to date about everything that's been going on is they've threatened to withdraw from the IAEA, the International Atomic Energy Agency that monitors their nuclear activity. And of course, Iran wasn't cooperating with them anyway, so no big deal that they're saying they're going to withdraw from it. Of the Republican Guard generals are all full of bravado. They've been making public announcements about, you wouldn't dare hit us, we'll hit you back, we'll do all kinds of bad things to you, and threatening missile attacks and drone attacks and so forth. And they've also said that they're going to threaten all of the surrounding elements, including other nations in the Persian Gulf, UAE, Saudi Arabia, Iraq, all the U.S. bases that are in the area, besides attacking Israel. So while they're talking about how they would give a massive response to it, that has to be anticipated, and we have to defend for that should that conflict open up. Iranian military options. So what have they been doing to get ready for the battle that's getting ready to take place? They just took one of the most significant missile batteries, which is their mobile intermittent ballistic missiles that are actually missiles on mobile launchers, normally kept in bunkers, wheeled out, and then shoot their missiles. Well, if you keep them in the bunkers, the U.S. is just going to come and bomb the bunkers and destroy them in there. So they've decided to move them out, and they have. They've moved a bunch of them into Iraq, into where the Iranian proxy units are in Iraq. And that does complicate the U.S. strike, taking out their missile arrays, their launchers, and their batteries for the U.S. and for Israel. It changes up the strike package that has to be done. And the whole idea of a mobile ballistic missile thing is to be able to move it around, defend it better by its mobility as opposed to staying in a bunker. Clearly, Iran knows that the bunker strategy is not going to work against B-2 bombers and bunker busters, so they're trying to come up with a way to protect those assets and still be able to use them. Iranian leaders are hiding and in various locations, and I would remind everybody that Iran does have hundreds of missiles and drones still left. And if they were able to launch all of them successfully, it would be a missile barrage greater than the one that we saw earlier in the year in which the U.S. and Israel successfully defended against. The Navy is in the Persian Gulf. They would obviously be attempting to shoot those down as well as be targets for it. The Iranian Navy would also have to be hit. They have all of those different ships that harass other shipping. They're in there to try to keep them from mining the Straits of Hormuz. They could shut down the Straits of Hormuz and block shipping traffic that goes out of the Persian Gulf to the rest of the world. The Navy obviously doesn't want that to happen. So they would have to deal with the Iranian Navy and prevent them from doing that. Historically, this is very similar to something that we saw several years ago when it came to dealing with Saddam Hussein and Iraq and the Iraq War. If you'll recall, the buildup under President Bush was getting ready for Saddam Hussein, and Secretary of State Baker at that time met with the foreign minister of Iraq. They had this special negotiation in an effort to try to use diplomacy instead of war. And they came out of the negotiation with Secretary Baker saying, sadly, we were not able to come to terms. And very shortly thereafter, the U.S. launched the massive bombing campaign on Iraq. And as a result, ground troops a month later then invaded Iraq, and that was the Gulf War. If you'll remember in those days, as it lit up, why it became a major broadcast event all around the world, especially here in the U.S., sitting in our living rooms watching CNN broadcast from Baghdad as bombs fell and missiles went off. And it introduced to us the first stealth fighter bomber, the F-117. They came in, they made the first strikes. it resulted in the overthrow of Saddam Hussein. Now, that's kind of what we're facing coming this weekend. The world is going to be watching to see what happens in these negotiations in Amman. Is the U.S., Steve Witkoff, going to walk out and say, yes, we're making progress, we're coming to terms with Iran, or is he going to come back and say, no, Iran is refusing to cooperate, and the military operation now takes effect? This time, we get to see the results, if there's a military operation, of what B-2s can really do. Now, B-2s have been used in spot issues before, but they'll be the first time to see them as a massive weapon system being displayed. We're going to probably be introduced to some new weapons on the part of the Israelis and the U.S., probably new tactics on how they do it, because the militaries have not been sitting around on their thumbs saying, well, let's wait for the next war. They've actually been preparing to do it, and they've been preparing for this war a long time. It probably is going to result in a regime change in Iran and the destruction of the Republican Guard, the military wing of the Islamic State. We'll have to see how all of that ends up. So let me shift gears and tell you about another part of the world that is of great interest to Israel and should be an interest of us. At the same White House meeting with Prime Minister Netanyahu, a question was asked about Turkey moving into Syria. And President Trump made a very interesting statement complimenting Erdogan, the leader of Turkey, and complimenting the fact that he's going into Syria and taking over Syria. Now, Israel is very concerned about that. They're very concerned about because they don't have a good history with Turkey and Erdogan. They've been very threatening. Erdogan, I would remind you, is a big-time supporter of Hamas and always has been, and against Israel. And just recently, knowing full well that Erdogan was getting ready to move into Syria, Israel bombed three old Syrian air bases, destroyed them, to make sure that Turkey can't move into those bases and begin to use them. So Israel knows Erdogan and the Turkish forces are moving down in there, but they're concerned about that. And they've expressed that concern to President Trump, but President Trump has assured Israel, and Trump believes that his personal relationship with Erdogan, that he were friends, and I know him, and he knows me, and oh, by the way, Israel, if you have any problem with him, you just come talk to me, and I'll handle it for you, which is the force of personality is basically what he's saying. However, one of the things that in foreign diplomacy that we learn is that in foreign diplomacy, we're not friends. We just have interests. And Trump's belief that his friendship with a leader can carry the day, quite honestly, is naive. It's interests that people are interested in. And Turkey doesn't like Israel, and Israel knows this. So Israel is very concerned about Erdogan and Turkish forces moving down into Syria and taking over. That's obviously a future problem for Israel to deal with. So if you put down Iran and get that solved, now we got another problem to the north with Turkey being in Syria. This requires very serious watching. This is not good for Israel. And here is Donald Trump describing his relationship with Erdogan, where he believes that his friendship can carry the day on this problem.
Well, I have great relations with a man named Erdogan. Have you heard of him? And I happen to like him, and he likes me, and I know the press will get very angry. He likes Erdogan, but I do, and he likes me, and we've never had a problem. Look, he's a tough guy, and he's very smart. And he did something that nobody was able to do. You know, you got to hand it to him. Any problem that you have with Turkey, I think I can solve. I mean, as long as you're reasonable. You have to be reasonable. We have to be reasonable. You know, I have a very, very good relationship with Turkey and with their leader. And I think we'll be able to work it out. So I hope that's not going to be a problem. I don't think it will be a problem.
There are multiple hostage negotiation proposals being put forward. The U.S. and Israel has put one forward. Egypt has submitted one. Each of these are attempting to get anything from 6 to 12 hostages back. There's some 24 still alive they're trying to get back. The number of prisoners that could be released to support a hostage negotiation is only 300 that Israel is controlling. And so Israel is having to hold on to those for the very last negotiation, and giving those away with only a few hostages back is not a solution for Israel. That's the nature of the negotiations. So the United States has been pressing very hard to get that one American back that is still being held hostage. And I don't know that that negotiation makes sense for all of the hostages. It might make sense for the one, but it doesn't solve the problem for the others. And Israel is concerned about the U.S. trying to pull off some kind of a negotiation just for one American, and quite honestly leaving Israel high and dry trying to negotiate for the others. The IDF is going in now and blocking off areas and dissecting the Gaza Strip into areas and putting the pressure on Hamas, driving them back into smaller and smaller areas in an effort to get the hostages released and to show Hamas there is no advantage for them trying to survive. They need to surrender and give up. Let me also mention just very briefly the ongoing controversies in Israel, which is the whole backdrop to all that's been going on with the other nations. There's one argument within Israel that says, end the war, get the hostages back. In other words, let Hamas survive. There's another argument that says, we have to destroy Hamas. We can't do this again. We can't let them take more hostages ever again. And I realize that it's delaying the hostage release, but we've got to eliminate Israel. So that controversy is going on, and there's a kind of a split decision in Israel with regard to that. October 7 investigations are now underway. Who did what? Who failed to do what back there when Hamas attacked to begin with? And of course, there's recriminations and blame, and we've already seen certain military officers having to resign. Netanyahu's calling for the firing of the Shin Bet leader. By the way, the courts just blocked that, so he's staying in there. All these controversies going on within the government. Reservists that decided they don't like the war, they signed letters and saying that we want the war over with. They've been revolting. And oh, by the way, they've been dismissed from the IDF. Israelis are fighting Israelis. In fact, there's some word amongst the liberal Israelis that Israel is on the brink of a civil war over the matter. It's very controversial and very difficult. And of course, in the midst of this, Hamas hears all of this and is encouraged by every bit of it. And that's part of the reason why they're refusing to surrender and they're refusing to give up hostages. They really think that Israel is being destroyed themselves. That's the level of controversy going on in the land. Passover is coming up for Israel with the Feast of Unleavened Bread. I want to read a passage to you that I think is timely at this moment. And in fact, this is a passage that has been turned into a song that's very popular in Israel at the moment about the controversies they're facing, about getting the hostages home, and about ending the conflicts that they have with other nations and amongst themselves. It's from the prophet Isaiah, chapter 61, verse 1. By the way, the Messiah actually quoted this passage of Scripture and spoke of himself when he did it. You'll see that obviously here. Let me share with you Isaiah, chapter 61, beginning at verse 1. The Spirit of the Lord God is upon me, because the Lord anointed me to bring good news to the humble. He has sent me to bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim release to the captives and freedom to the prisoners, to proclaim the favorable year of the Lord and the day of vengeance of our God, to comfort all who mourn, to grant those who mourn in Zion, giving them a garland instead of ashes, the oil of gladness instead of mourning, the cloak of praise instead of a disheartened spirit. So they will be called oaks of righteousness, the planting of the Lord, that he may be glorified. Then they will rebuild the ancient ruins, they will raise up the former devastations, and they will repair the ruined cities, the desolations of many generations. As I said to you before, this has become a very popular song in Israel. Specifically, it speaks to the families that are hoping for their hostages, their captives to be released, all those who suffered loss, to comfort those who are mourning. And obviously, this is the work of the Messiah, and we're praying for the Messiah to come soon to accomplish all of that good work to bind up the brokenhearted. We continue to pray for Israel. Let me encourage you, pray Isaiah 61 over Israel. That's where Israel is focusing at the moment. Spiritually, it has a very powerful message. Thank you for viewing this program. Thank you for liking, commenting, and subscribing on our YouTube channel. And if you would, look into lionandlamb.tv. That's our subscription service. That's where you get a whole host of all of our programs. You can get a free subscription to our magazine. It comes out each month, Yavoh. He is coming. And we have our podcast network on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Pandora, wherever you get your podcasts, including you can find us on X, Telegram, TikTok, Facebook, Instagram. And if you show up here at the office, I'll even show you what I got on the back of my hand. We're all over the place, and we're trying to get the message out to the whole world. Please join us and be a part of that. Enjoy the Feast of Unleavened Bread, and enjoy your matzah. And until then, Shabbat Shalom.